Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, Irish owned and Irish made for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning, Colm O'Mungain here for this week. Can a ceasefire for Gaza be secured before a wider Israeli assault on Rafah, and for how long? We'll get the latest on talks in Cairo as they hang in the balance. We look at the big issues dominating the European elections in the first of a series of reports from Brian O'Connell, plus 25 years since the broadcast of RTE's States of Fear. Historian Diarmaid Ferriter looks at the legacy of that landmark programme, and giving job seekers a sneak peek. Is it time we simplify job interviews by sharing questions in advance? Text us this morning on 51551. You can also email us at todaycb@rte.ie. Now, first to the Middle East, and the Israeli military has said it has taken operational control of the Palestinian side of Gaza's southern Rafah crossing, which borders Egypt, and that special forces are scanning the area. It comes after the Palestinian militant group Hamas yesterday agreed to Gaza ceasefire proposals from mediators, but Israel said the terms didn't meet its demands, and it's pressed ahead with strikes in Rafah, which hospitals in the area say have killed 27 people. Israel says it will send negotiators to the talks in Cairo. And for more on this, we're joined by Belle True, international correspondent for the London Independent, and also here in studio, Vincent Durack, associate professor in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD. Belle, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Israel taking operational control over the Rafah border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. What does that mean for ordinary people who've been using it mostly to get out, but also to get in, and also aid getting in there as well?
Well, it's potentially catastrophic, because Rafah and Kerem Shalom crossing, which I believe both are closed at the moment, are the main points, if not pretty much the only points for humanitarian aid getting into Gaza. And at the moment, they are both closed. And of course, Rafah is essentially a battleground right now. And so we've had reports just coming in the last few minutes from UN officials essentially saying that, you know, this could strangle, be a chokehold on aid, essential aid to families in Gaza. And I was actually just speaking to someone in Rafah about 5 minutes ago who said that food prices had already more than doubled, and that there was panic that there wasn't going to be enough supplies to get around. Of course, also, you have very heavy bombardments, tanks and troops in that area. I was talking to some families in eastern Rafah just last night who were saying the bombing was really intense, and that essentially they were trying to flee any way that they could, by foot, by donkey cart, by truck, by tractor, whatever was possible. So the concern is, of course, that there are a lot of civilians in this area, and this could be, you know, a humanitarian catastrophe on a scale we haven't seen yet.
And fleeing to where, and what's in place to receive them?
Well, this is, you know, quite an important question. So the leaflets that were dropped over eastern Rafah yesterday by the Israeli military, and also the text messages that people received, talked about how they needed to evacuate out of east Rafah, the sort of northwest, to an area called Al Mawasi, where the Israelis said they'd built field hospitals, tents, and had increased water, food and medical supplies in what they called an expanded humanitarian zone. The issue is that everyone I'm speaking on the ground is not talking about that zone. They're talking about panic. They're talking about trying to find any patch of land to be able to pitch their tents. So I'm not entirely sure what is going on with this so-called humanitarian zone, but at least the families that I'm speaking to are basically going into these areas which have no infrastructure. There's no running water. They're essentially just sand dunes or open land, and pitching tents and moving all their belongings and their loved ones, if they can, under bombardment. And it's really important to mention that these people have been displaced multiple times. I was talking to one family where this was the fifth time that they had been displaced. They couldn't even get all of the family out of East Rafah yesterday because they didn't have enough space on the car that they were using to get out. So the situation for them is, you know, really, you know, extremely terrifying and worrying. And they're already living in, you know, humanitarian crisis. So the concern is it's only going to deepen.
And what are Israel's objectives? They've taken the border crossing. They've made an incursion into eastern Rafah. Have they said, apart from their kind of maximalist objectives that they stated at the outset of destroying Hamas, have they said exactly what they're going after in Rafah?
Well, a statement just came out literally about sort of 5 minutes ago from the military saying that they had intelligence that indicated that the Gazan side of the Rafah crossing was being used by the militants for their purposes. They said in earlier statements that there was an attack. So there was an attack on Kerem Shalom crossing, they said, by militants on Sunday, and that mortar attack originated from the Rafah crossing. That's the Israeli claim. But as you know, Rafah is, of course, essentially, it's a main artery of aid coming into Gaza. And so the deep concern now is that humanitarian operations have basically had to pause, that we won't be able to get those trucks coming in. The food that is available in the market in the south, the prices will have to rise so high that people won't be able to afford them. There's also concerns about medical supplies. Also, people, you know, are trying to get out of Gaza. Very few people are allowed to leave, but those on the list, you know, won't be able to get out. And the concern is, of course, that, you know, Rafah is home to 1.4 million people, most of them displaced, half of them children. They're living in tents, people sending me photos of their living conditions. They have, you know, tarpaulin, cardboard, cloth between them and whatever's being fired at them. There's nowhere to hide. The soil is essentially sandy. There's no basements. There's nowhere to go. And this is why there's been so much international condemnation of a potential ground assault. The Israelis say it's essential for their victory, but even their closest ally and largest weapon supplier, the US, has said, you know, President Biden himself has said in interviews that Rafah is a red line. So the question is, will this be curtailed? Will there be pressure on Israel to go for a ceasefire? And just to say, it's very important to say also, the families of the hostages themselves are calling for a ceasefire. They believe their loved ones are in Rafah. They're incredibly frightened that they're going to be under this bombardment as well. So there were actually protests in the streets last night in Tel Aviv. I was talking to family members. They were saying they need Israel to sign any deal, whatever it takes, to get their loved ones out.
And Hamas, going to the talks in Cairo then, it says it has agreed to a Gaza ceasefire proposal from mediators. Is it clear what they've agreed to? Israel says the terms don't meet its demands. It says it is more agreeable with other terms. So, I mean, people are slightly in the dark as to what's at play here. Can you throw any light on that?
So officially, we don't have any details. So Hamas said they'd signed, as I said, a ceasefire agreement, but the details of which were not made immediately public. Israel said that the terms were unacceptable. But for example, Al Jazeera published what they say is the wording of the ceasefire. And if you compare this to what the Israeli sort of proposal was, it appears that the issue is that the timeline has been extended in the Hamas's agreements. They're talking about releasing 33 Israeli captives over the period of 42 days, which is a longer time frame than Israel wanted. Israel was talking about basically a hostage being released every day. Also, in the wording that's been put out on Al Jazeera, they're saying that this is 33 Israeli captives alive or dead. So Israel wanted 33, you know, hostages who are alive. And also in the text, Hamas is talking about Israeli forces withdrawing from parts of Gaza in a sort of phased, basically in different stages. This is something I think that Israel has an issue with. They've talked about this only being a temporary ceasefire and then them continuing with their operation. Benjamin Netanyahu has said repeatedly they want victory, they want to eliminate all of Hamas, and they will keep going until that happens. He is facing political pressure from his own war cabinet. He has far-right members of his cabinet who don't want to have a ceasefire on these terms. So I'm sure that he's concerned that if he agrees to something, he might lose his government because the coalition would collapse. collapse. So that's another dynamic in play. But certainly there's mounting pressure, first of all, for the humanitarian catastrophe that's taking place, and a potential bloodbath is the word that UN officials have used for those in Rafah. Families of the hostages who are super frightened about their loved ones being under this bombing, and international pressure from some of the closest allies like the US, who are saying this cannot happen and that a ceasefire deal needs to happen now.
Right, but until a ceasefire deal happens, as you say, overnight we've seen attacks on Rafah, we've seen the Hamas military wing claim responsibility for that attack on the Israelis at Kerem Shalom on Sunday, and claiming that they fired again on Israeli forces today. So we can expect this phase of the conflict to continue until something is hammered out formally in Cairo, can we, if that happens indeed?
Yes, that seems to be what will occur. And there are some reports, or at least concerns, or maybe speculations is a better term, that Israel will keep pushing and pushing and pushing to get as far as they of their objectives that they have in Rafah before a ceasefire deal is finally agreed. But at what cost? Certainly the people I'm talking to on the ground, you know, are desperate and frightened and don't know where to go, and they have nowhere to hide, and they have been displaced multiple times. Food prices are soaring. Humanitarian aid, you know, has essentially, that flow of aid has been cut. And there are deep also concerns for the hostages who are living under those conditions as well. So I think, you know, we'll have to see what plays out in the next 24 hours. But we're really, you know, the UN has warned of a potential bloodbath. And, you know, this could be have devastating impact for people on the ground.
Vincent Durack, who's here in studio with me, Associate Professor at the School of Politics and International Relations in DCU. What's the dilemma for Israel here in terms of what's the dilemma for Israel, both in keeping its international parties, allies on side, and also keeping the domestic government together?
Well, the critical dilemma is that Netanyahu faces a contradiction in terms of the asserted war aims of his venture in Gaza, and the fact that his closest supporter, the United States, have made clear that a full-scale bombardment, a full-scale invasion of Rafah is a red line. But what we don't know, of course, is what exactly that means from a US point of view. In domestic terms, as Bell has just pointed out, the government faces the further dilemma that it has lost a great deal of support, not just in terms of Netanyahu personally, but in terms of its pursuit of the war in Gaza, to, as many see it, the neglect of the plight of the hostages that remain there. And there are clear majorities in opinion polls in Israel that indicate a dramatic loss of faith in the Netanyahu government to bring hostages home, as opposed to securing his other war aim, which is the defeat of and the destruction of Hamas, which seems to be in contradiction to any possibility of securing hostage release.
So that's the real dilemma, that this is, and apologies, you're the Professor of International Relations in UCD rather than DCU. I've known your credentials too long, but in the case of the trying to balance the two war aims, on the one hand, secure the release of the hostages and apply military pressure, as they say, to Hamas, and at the same time, keep his own cabinet happy to drive through the complete military destruction of Hamas. I mean, the latter seems to be ambitious to the point of unachievable.
From the beginning, I think it's been clear to so many observers that any attempt to destroy Hamas in the way that Netanyahu set out on October 7, October 8, was unachievable. And, you know, there are practical and there are ideational, if you like, aspects to this. I mean, on the one hand, there is simply the cost of eliminating the military apparatus of Hamas, which is not inconsiderable. And we see this now with the focus on what we are told are four Hamas brigades that are entrenched in Rafah. I mean, the sheer cost of dislodging and destroying those militants, as opposed to the loss of civilian life, all of that is incalculable. But there's also the fact that Hamas represents a strand, I mean, whatever you think of it, in terms of Palestinian self-determination. I mean, it represents an aspiration for that, couched in Islamist tones and in violent rhetoric, as we know as well. Extirpating that is a very different matter entirely. And as many see, in the absence of any political or moves towards a political solution in relation to Palestinian hopes for self-government, it's very, very difficult to see how you eliminate Hamas, as it were. So Netanyahu has effectively set himself up for a fall one way or another.
All right, Vincent Jurak, thanks very much. And earlier, Bel True, international correspondent with the London Independent, thanks very much for joining us. Now, three reports into RTE are to be considered by Cabinet later today. We'll get the very latest next.
Text 51551, today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.